Charlie, I'm not quite sure how much good it will do without the stuff on the blackboard. So. So I'm going to start with some definitions. The examples are going to come a little bit later, though I promise I will put up some examples. I'm interested, so I have a group G, which will be finite, especially Z mod NZ, or the integers. I guess I'll abbreviate this to Zn. There will be no N or P adic numbers in this talk. I have a C-star algebra A, which will be simple, stably finite. In fact, it will have stable rank 1, real rank 0, and order on projections determined by traces. And I guess I really mean tracial states here. Tau of P less than tau of Q for all tracial states tau is going to imply that P is Murray-Vindaman equivalent to a subprojection of Q. At least I'm going to usually assume these properties. So let me start off with definition. And for this one, I actually don't need the restrictions in the C-star algebra. So alpha, but I do need A to be unital. So G to automorphisms of A. And here G is finite. And A is unital. Has the Rouchlin property, which I want to abbreviate to RP, if, and let me write things at least carefully out once, for all epsilon bigger than 0, for all finite subsets in the algebra, there exist orthogonal projections, e.g., for G in G, such that, and I have three conditions here, the norm of alpha G of EH minus EGH is less than epsilon for all G and H in the group. So they are approximately, I mean, the group action looks like the regular representation. The norm of EG commutator with A, I'll use commutators a lot, this is EGA minus AEG, plus epsilon, for all G in the group, and A in my finite subset. And third, the sum over G in G of EG is equal to 1. Obviously, if the algebra is not unital, I cannot write this condition. Okay, so now I want to modify the definition a bit to give the tracial Rouchlin property. So, definition, alpha AG as before, for the tracial Rouchlin property. And here I actually do want to assume, so A, now will, I do want the conditions up there, I want this, the, I want real rank 0, etc. If for all epsilon bigger than 0, for all S in A finite, etc., So it's all the same except down. This is the same. I guess I actually have them labeled. Here's what we call this 1, 2, 3. And now 3 is changed a little bit. It says that 1 minus the sum over G in G of EG. Okay, so this is now a projection. These EGs were orthogonal projections. Is small. And one way, given the assumptions I put up there of saying that it's small, is to say that all terrestrial states are less than epsilon on it. Tau of 1 minus the sum over of EG is less than epsilon for all tau in the terrestrial state space of A. Now, so this one certainly makes perfectly good sense no matter what the algebra is. For this one, if I don't make some assumptions like this in the algebra, then it's not quite clear how I should say that this projection is small. What happens if A is not simple? What happens if A is purely infinite, and even if it is simple? And so on. I mean, it may be, for example, that all you need for when A is purely infinite is to say that the E sub G's are all non-zero, given that every projection is small. I don't know. There's another question, and I'll mention questions as I go along. Another question about how to modify both versions of the definition. Right, if A doesn't have any non-trivial projections, then obviously none of these can hold. But nevertheless, they correspond to some kind of freeness, strong form of freeness of the action, and that ought to make sense, even if the algebra has no non-trivial projections. So, Wolfram properties are good for various things. Indeed, I've been told, in fact, one of my colleagues is a student, his thesis advisor was the Rochlin involved here. I've been told that the Rochlin lemma, which this is named after, was originally proved for the purpose of proving that an ergodic measure preserving transformation has a small, in some sense, generating set of subsets. Nothing like what I'm going to be doing with it here. Izumi used this one, especially in the case of purely infinite simple C-strand algebras, for the purpose of classifying automorphisms, and that's also being done with analogous things in Feynman algebras. But I'm interested in the cross products, which is a bit different direction. So let me put up theorems just for. I'm not going to say anything about the proofs yet. In fact, most of that will be in the second part of the talk tomorrow. But just to see what they can be new with them. So theorem for G equals Z mod NZ. I don't think I need that because that's the only case I've actually proved it for. Probably works for any finite group. So AF, an alpha, has the Rochlin property, then C star of G A alpha is AF. And this one is, theorem, again, G is Z mod NZ. A is now tracially AF in the sense of Lin. Basically, and I should say simple, unital. What does it mean? It means basically that when you approximate by a finite set by a finite dimensional subalgebra, you have to cut off a small corner. Same way that you cut off a small corner here. I will be a little bit more careful with the definition at some later time. And alpha has the tracial Rochlin property. Then C star of G A alpha is tracially AF. So I'm going to abbreviate this tracially like that. I don't like to call it TAF, which Lynn said, because that seems to me to mean triangular AF algebra, a concept which got there first, and which some other people, some in this room, are familiar with. No, a triangular AF algebra is a kind of non-self-adjoint subalgebra of an AF algebra, whereas this thing is a self-adjoint and doesn't have to have anything to do with an AF algebra. And I'll say something about the proofs later, but let me say right now that the proofs of these two things are really basically the same. Now, the ultimate goal of this talk is the case of integer actions, which are much more complicated. But first of all, some of the motivations and methods are related, and secondly, these turned out to have interesting consequences, which I at least want to mention. There's also another thing which I also want to mention because it relates to a question I don't know the answer to. There are fairly obvious possible obstructions to having an action with the Roughlin property, even when the C-star algebra has real rank 0, so there are lots of projections. Suppose, for example, that A has a unique trace. This happens lots of the time. Suppose that the group has order n, and there aren't any projections with trace 1 over n. Well, then this is condition 3 is impossible, no matter what the action is. So there are obvious and some less obvious obstructions, k-theoretic obstructions, to the Roughlin property, and the less obvious obstructions are due to Izumi. Which do not interfere with the tracial Roughlin property. In particular, an example of the situation I just mentioned, take an irrational rotation algebra or a completely non-rational higher dimensional non-commutative torus. Then there are not going to be any projections with rational non-integer trace. On the other hand, actions on such algebras with the tracial Roughlin property of finite cyclic groups played a key role in the proof that every simple higher dimensional non-commutative torus is an AT algebra. Those actions cannot possibly have the Roughlin property. Okay, so let me now switch to G equals Z. Or Z, I guess I should say here. So now let me put definition. This one is taken from Izumi's survey. But you can probably find it in one of Kishimoto's papers. Kishimoto is, okay, not quite the first, but the first to work extensively with the Roughlin property for automorphisms of the integers. Actions of the integers, I should say. Automorphisms of C-star algebras. And the case he first looked at was actions on UHF algebras. where there are effective simplifications available, and you can put a definition which, in the more general case, is clearly too restrictive. So, and I will simply talk about an automorphism alpha. I'll just call alpha the automorphism. I'll say the automorphism has the Wilson property or whatever property it has. So alpha has the Wilson property if for all n, so I have a new parameter. In the case of a finite group, the size of my tower, so to speak, is exactly the size of the group. Now it has to be arbitrary. But the rest of it is basically the same. For all S in A finite, and for all epsilon bigger than 0, there exists orthogonal projections E1 EN and F1 up to Fn plus 1. So there are going to be two towers here, such that one, analog of the permutation stuff over there, norm alpha of Ej minus Ej plus 1 is less than epsilon for 1 less than or equal to j less than or equal to n minus 1. So nothing is said about where En goes. And norm alpha of Fj minus Fj plus 1 less than epsilon for now j 1 less than or equal to j less than or equal to n. And now nothing about alpha of Fn plus 1. Two, commutation relation. Norm, which I seem to have, oh no, I do have it here. Norm Ej A. Norm Fj A commutator or less than epsilon for all suitable j and all A in S. And three, they add up to the identity. Sum over j equals 1 to n of Ej plus sum j equals 1 to n plus 1 of Fj equal to 1. Okay, so brief comment should be made here. You might wonder about why I've chosen specifically to make towers of height n or an n plus 1. Well, you can write down this definition where for every n there exists some finite number, perhaps large, of towers of arbitrary heights bigger than or equal to n. At least if you're careful with what happens with epsilon here, you do need to, n and epsilon are independent, but you need to make sure that the epsilon can be made small depending on the height of the, smaller than, say, epsilon prime divided by the height of the tower. If you write things down that way, then you can get some definition which looks much more general. But in fact, if you take such towers and break them up into pieces, then you can always produce something like this. So in fact, this definition isn't any more special, and having only two of them in a specified height certainly simplifies the notation. Now, I should mention a couple of things that follow. So it follows that alpha of En plus Fn plus 1 is close to plus F1. I get n or n plus 1 times epsilon, but epsilon can be made small independently of n. So if I wanted to live for epsilon, I simply do this with epsilon over n, or n over n plus 1 to begin with. The early versions, especially on UHF algebras, for example, had only one power. Well, for example, if you're looking at the 2 to the infinity UHF algebra, then all the projections have trace integer divided by 2 to the n. And so, well, you simply take projections e1 up to en, whose traces are 1 over 2 to the r for suitable r, and you're going to have this only for n of the form 2 to the r. And finally, unlike the finite group case, this is the integer. The group is the integers. Yeah, but you see, I can't do what's over there. I mean, because the infinite sums don't make sense, and I mean, so I have to look at finite subsets of the group. I mean, there is a more general analog of this, or at least there should be. I mean, it's been written down in the Feynman algebra case, and one should be able to write down in the C-star algebra case, and at some point I'm going to need to do that to pursue the sort of general program I have. For the tracial version of it, for an arbitrary, countable, amenable group. It matters that the subset of the group, when you multiply by a generator and take the symmetric difference, the symmetric difference isn't very big. Finite groups are trivially amenable by taking your subset of the group to be the whole group. So that's effectively what's going on between there and here. It gets a bit complicated. Well, okay, first of all, let me put up the tracial version, because that's the only one which seems to work. So, definition, alpha has the tracial Ruffin property if for all n, epsilon, and s, there exist orthogonal projections E1, En, and since I'm going to allow a leftover, effectively I'll just incorporate Fn plus 1 to the leftover, so I'm only going to have one tower. Such that, one, the norm of alpha of Ej minus Ej plus 1 is less than epsilon. For 1 less than or equal to j, less than n minus 1, nothing about alpha of En. Two, the norms of the commutators EjA are less than epsilon for the usual values of A and J. And three, 1 minus the sum from j equals 1 to n of Ej is small. And again, since I'm assuming, and here I had better say that A has real rank 0, stable rank 1, etc., and simple. And if I assume that, in particular, if I assume the order on projections determined by traces, then small can mean that tau of 1 minus the sum of Ej is less than epsilon for all tracial states tau. and I guess I want unital here. Although I won't get to it, there's a reason that one wants to make something like this work even when A is not unital. And I have reasonable hopes that I can figure out how to do that. Basically, the leftover should still be small, but one doesn't have to be in the algebra anymore. But I've got to worry about there being a suitable number of traces, and the traces all being finite. Because if I combine E and F together here, then I get an immediate K-theoretic abstraction. Again, suppose that A has a unique trace, and if I have this with no Fs, then the trace of E1 is equal to 1 over N. On the other hand, for example, assorted automorphisms, and I'll write down something in a moment, of irrational rotation algebras actually have this property with two towers. Now, for an arbitrary amenable group, you're supposed to use Filner sets. So in the integers, an integral from 1 to n with large n is a Filner set, so is the integral from 1 to n plus 1. You will not be able to cut down to one or even finitely many. You will apparently also not be able to achieve this kind of condition here, where the sum is equal to one, almost no matter what happens, and even in the commutative case, so even when you're looking at actions on the Cantor set, at least in general that appears to be the case. I don't know of any theorems which say you can't do this, but people have worked on it and not succeeded in doing that, and the things they've proved are weaker. In fact, they look like this. Only they're more complicated because of the larger number of Filner sets. And you start getting awkwardness with overlaps of the sets as well. This one, by the way, looks much more like the form the Russell lemma takes, at least in current textbooks on ergodic theory, where it says you have an ergodic measure, theoretic measure preserving transformation, and you should be able to find a measurable set such that it and a certain number of its translates are disjoint and almost cover the space, almost meaning up to a set of measure less than epsilon. That's this. Well, yeah, if I have the statement with only one tower, then I certainly have the statement with two towers. If I have the statement with two towers, I cannot, in general, get the statement with one tower. No, because one of them is one step longer than the other. Right? The E's go up to N and the F's go to N plus 1. In the tracial case, for example, if I only have E1 up to EN, okay? If I have a unique trace, then the trace applied to E1 must be equal to 1 over N. If I have both of these, and I'm saying that N times the trace of E1 plus N plus 1 times the trace of F1 equals 1. Here, all I'm saying is that N times the trace of E1 is bigger than 1 minus epsilon. And it's allowed to be arbitrary in there. It's not entirely obvious that this one implies that one. I mean, after all, I can't just throw away Fn plus 1 because maybe epsilon is much less than 1 over n. Okay, so now... So I want to say at this point that some of this is joint work with Hiroyuki Osaka, and in particular, this definition is from a paper with him. It's a lemma. Well, this is in progress, so let me say not checked. For C-tree algebras, as in the definition of the Treschow-Wilson property. In other words, real rank 0, stable rank 1, order of projections determined by traces, and so on. Simple. The Wilson property, as in Izumi, implies the Treschow-Wilson property. I have to actually do some combinatorial messing around. I mean, the way you get, you take here towers which are considerably larger than you expect to get over there. And you have to combine things somehow or other. So it's primarily just some sort of combinatorial stuff. Converse, I don't know. Yes, that's right. This is a definition for actions of the integers. This is a definition for actions of the integers. I'm sorry, I wrote the wrong. This is from Izumi's survey article. So there's two separate things. There's yes, yes. I didn't actually check, but it should be in Kishimoto. Yeah, I assume so, but I didn't actually find the paper where he wrote that down. So the place where I actually found this definition was in a survey article that Izumi wrote. So Izumi didn't actually prove theorems about the okay, so what Izumi wrote was he wrote this definition, and then he made a comment which says that in all known cases, this is equivalent to the Wilson properties defined by in other places. And Kishimoto's written down several of them of various kinds as he went from to more general algebras. But yes, I'm sure, though I haven't tracked down the right reference, that this definition is somewhere in one of Kishimoto's papers. But yes, Izumi wrote a survey article about the Wilson property for actions of the integers, and two papers about actions of finite groups with the Wilson property. The converse, unknown. There aren't any obvious K-theoretic, at least not obvious to me, K-theoretic obstructions to this one. Not when I allow two towers in it of slightly different heights. So I don't know. Whether if I have the Treschow-Wilson property on an algebra with simple unital, stable rank 1, real rank 0, order on traces determined by projections, or even, let's say, with Treschow rank 0, Treschow AF in Lin sense. Monomorphism with this one, can I manage to get this property with now more than one tower but no leftover? I don't know. Okay, so now, and also a convenient a theorem. This is with Osaka and following Kishimoto. So again, so A is simple unital. And now I better assume tracially AF and unique tertial state. Then alpha has the Treschow-Wilson property if and only if, and I should warn that this direction is not checked. But the important one is the other one. So I'm going to take on the factor associated with the GNS construction for the trace, unitracial state tau, then on pi tau of A double prime, alpha, I guess, double prime, to the nth is outer for all n not equal to 0. So I guess so this pi tau of A double prime is a factor of type 2, 1. Here's automorphism of it, and those should all be outer. In fact, it's a hyperfinite 2, 1 factor. Wait, is that specifically true? Do I need to assume nuclear or something? Maybe I didn't need nuclear. I'll put nuclear, so I'll guarantee it's the hyperfinite 2, 1 factor. I have to think, look carefully exactly what was done, but I think it is significant because when you look at the proofs, so in Feynman algebras, if the automorphism is outer, or its powers are outer, then you expect to get the Rolfman property of some kind. But it's actually tricky because what you could actually prove directly doesn't have this condition in it. Okay, so the other difference is you always have trace norm in all these places. And the main meat of that theorem is actually correcting that. But the definition, the thing which you actually prove, doesn't have this commutator inequality, commutator norm estimate. And the way you get such things is you then apply the original result to not the original factor, but the central sequence algebra. Well, I better know something that central sequence algebra is something for which the results actually apply.
So that's
still yes. Yeah. No. You have to work at correcting at the cost of adding to the leftover at every stage in the correction construction. You have to work at correcting inequalities in the trace norm to inequalities in the operator norm, and there's an assortment of technical stuff that goes in there, which that would make a whole hour talk all by itself. I actually need one of the lemmas, but I'll state it in the second half of the talk. I want to finish today by telling you about examples and motivation. I promised some examples, I haven't given any yet. Of actions, yes. So here is, I'll just write things down in a special case. Example one. And I should mention, although I guess I won't actually state them carefully until the next time, that for certain situations there are theorems which tell you that the cross product, again, is either AT or has tracial rank 0 or something like that. There are theorems of Kishimoto using this condition, and there is a theorem of Huaxin-Lin and Hiroyuki Osaka which uses this condition but has, or a variant of it rather, and has extra hypotheses. They all assume some kind of something related to innerness, and you'll see in the examples I sometimes don't want that. So A theta is the irrational rotation algebra. And I'll take 1, gamma, lambda, and theta, linearly independent over the rationals. I wonder if this microphone picks up the sound of falling chalk. And then this has unitaries U and V, and I'll set alpha of U is e to the 2 pi I gamma U, and alpha of V is e to the 2 pi I lambda V. Then the cross product is some three-dimensional non-commutator torus. And if in your skew symmetric matrix you take all the entries in the upper triangle to be rationally independent, then you can always get it that way. And in fact, the structure of this cross product, this action, and its generalizations to higher dimensional non-commutative toruses here, satisfy the hypotheses of Kishimoto's theorem, in particular that they are approximately inner. And Kishimoto uses it to prove that generically, in particular in the case when all the entries are rationally independent, the simple higher dimensional non-commutative toruses are AT algebras. And the business about the finite cyclic group actions was used basically to get from the cases covered by Kishimoto's results to the general case. Of course, he starts using that this is an AT algebra, which is the Elliott-Evans theorem. So I should say the action has the Roffman property. And of course, it cannot have, if I only had log one tower, is it still there yet? I can't get it without the S, because there's no projection of trace 1 over N. How much time do I have? Let me just write down a couple more examples. Yes, and indeed even before that, but the point is this works inductively. So, I mean, I just wrote it down for the case of a two-dimensional one here, but in fact, if this is an arbitrary, simple...
Well, you get the arbitrary one length.
Yes.
Is this the
I use Kishimoto's result. So...
Well, this is covered by Kishimoto's theorem.
This thing is covered by Kishimoto's theorem, yes. That's right, that's right. So again, basically he proves that if the automorphism has this property, and it's approximately inner and a couple other technical things, actually I think he actually just had homotopic to inner action plus some technical conditions, and if the original algebra is AT, then the cross product is AT. Yes, but that turns out to be true. So yes, you have to actually prove that, but he actually manages to prove it. Whenever you take some higher dimensional non-commutative torus, take an action like this one, so that both the original and the cross product are simple, then he proves that the Roffman property holds.
Okay, but the point is that doesn't cover absolutely all cases.
That's correct. So, I don't have a proof of this fact, but I have, I guess I have examples which certainly look like that's what you expect to have happen. This argument shows that, every higher dimensional non-commutative torus is a successive cross product by the integers at each time. If you can choose them so that the cross products are simple at every stage, then Kishimoto's result proves that the resulting thing is an AT algebra. The purpose of the finite cyclic group actions is to show that you can reduce the general simple case to the case in which all the intermediate cross products are simple and to tensor products of those. So in particular, none of the arguments in my paper actually change the dimension of the non-commutative torus involved. You'd have to know that it was a direct limit of simple finite dimensional ones.
And I guess
Well, everything involved is finite, so I would, well, maybe, yeah. I would suspect that using the machinery, that using Kishimoto's machinery and mine together, that you ought to be able to get an arbitrary infinite dimensional one, but I don't know and I've never thought about it. My best guess is it would work, but no promises.
And those power ODI are not as concrete point in terms of USB, right?
No. In fact, they are gotten, I mean, Kishimoto actually lists several equivalent conditions. And I believe that also applies to the theorem that he's using here, certainly the earlier ones. There are, you assume unique trace, you assume you have an AT algebra, simple, real rank zero. Then a list of conditions are equivalent. One of them is the Rochlin proper. One of them is the statement that the cross product has real rank zero. One of them is the statement that the cross product has a unique trace. One of them is the statement that the action, where is it? Is this business, that the corresponding automorphism of the 2-1 factor is aperiodic. And he actually gets the tracial Rochlin property by using that theorem together with the fact that, for example, the next non-commutative torus up has a unique trace. So no, there's no explicit construction. It looks like I've gone 5 minutes over time already for this talk, so maybe I'll have to postpone the remaining examples.